I'll start off by speaking just like Rex did, basically say I'm not Greg Taylor. I'm Rob Tunstead, but I will serve as his interpreter later for when he does get to do his presentation. So here I'm here to present to you a Coastal Zone Soul Survey. How many live in the Coastal Zone? Okay, great. How many know what Coastal Zone Soul Survey is? Okay, good. That's good. And how many know what Soul Survey is? Okay, so I'm seeing all kinds of good hands. That's great. After our presentation, we do have some soul planners for people to pick up. So Coastal Zone Soul Survey, here to talk to you about that. Just going to give you a brief history of Coastal Zone Soul Survey. These, basically, we started to map, or the United States didn't start to map soils underneath water, but it was considered in European countries up into the 1860s. And they started to describe them as soil instead of sediment. Recently, people have described them as sediment in the United States, but it's been basically started to be accepted here. So soil scientists in the 1970s began to encroach in or get to our coastal zone soils and those areas in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We started to map those soils in the salt marshes, on the barrier islands, the barrier beaches. Again, they weren't significantly agriculturally producing soils. But in 1993, we had Dr. George Demas, who published Submerged Soils, A New Frontier in Soil Survey. And that was published in Soil Survey Horizons. And basically, Dr. Demas pioneered the concept of subaqueous soils, differentiating them finally in the United States from sediment to soil. So this was his publication in Soil Survey Horizons. One of his last quotes, I think, is just absolutely perfect to put here. Let us take the step to boldly go where few soil scientists have gone before and submerge, in quotes there, ourselves in our new frontier. Excellent, excellent quote, excellent statement there. Dr. Demas was a Soil Survey project leader in Worcester County, Massachusetts. These were some of his awards, and basically he stumbled onto subaqueous soils doing a Worcester County Soil Survey update. They have a couple of these islands in Chincoteague Bay, which I could show you about. That's another talk for another day, but they would go out and investigate these islands for soil survey purposes, but as he was walking out there and getting his boat stuck, was walking across eelgrass and eelgrass beds, and basically said, if I'm mapping this salt marsh, why am I not mapping these eelgrass beds? Why are these not considered soils as well? So that's basically the concept of that. Dr. Demas basically proposed, and in his paper and in his research and dissertation, basically concluded that these soils go under the four soil forming processes of additions, losses, transfers, and transformations. We heard a talk previously before by the gentleman in Louisiana where the marsh was still going through denitrification processes below water. So that, again, is a evidence of soil. So bottom line, that these materials are soil materials. We do have discernible soil horizons, as Dr. Ellis basically just showed, in some of these soils. Those would not be the true subaqueous soil that we would be talking about. But predominantly when we're looking at these soils, they have A and C characteristics with some buried O horizons, and the buried O horizons would be that sequestered blue carbon. These are some other excellent profiles. The profile on the left would be, again, what Dr. Ellis was just speaking of. That would be a buried spodosol. The soil on the left, or the core on the left that we took from Barnegat Bay, is basically what we would consider a wash sense. But this was below, and a core that was retrieved from 2 meters of water in Barnegat Bay. So not only do you have soil forming processes going up in the soil surface, but you also have that buried and preserved ochric epipedon, your albic horizon. You could also see your spodic horizon beginning at 145 centimeters below the soil surface. This was another slide that was showed by a previous presenter as well. So why are we talking about Coastal Zone Soil Survey? This slide is simply staggering and amazing. We have about 40%. I saw a lot of hands where people said, I live in a coastal zone area. We have about 40% of our nation's population that lives within what we would consider a coastal county. That's why coastal zone soil survey is very important. We need to go back and do a better job with mapping our soils within these areas. Another large reason why October 29th, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of this particular named storm, Superstorm Sandy. That could be Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy. That's a talk for another day. But basically, this is the iconic roller coaster that everyone got to see in those news flashes and some of those images there. But this was a barrier islands and a former talk that was presented before in this session. You could see the before shot of August 2012 and an after shot after Superstorm Sandy, and you could basically see your grasses died off in that image. And this was also another famous shot that we saw on the nightly news. This was a inlet feature that was created in Barnegat Bay. This is Route 528 in the Manilocan area, and we now have a Manilocan soil series named after these particular inlet areas or relic inlet features. Sea level trends, you've seen it all before in previous talks. This is a nice, beautiful NOAA slide of some of our sea level trends. We have a considerable amount of yellow and green arrows compared to the West Coast, so we are going under what we would consider gradual sea level rise. Gradual sea level rise in our lifetime, in a geologic time period, we're going through rapid sea level rise. So coastal zone soil survey, why? Basically, our soil survey maps need to be connected to FEMA and FIRM maps, those flood insurance maps. There's a tremendous amount of research, as previous speakers within the session have said, on salt marsh restoration, eelgrass restoration, subaquatic vegetation restoration, shellfish and oysters. You need to know what your best soils are there before you invest all of these resources and money into restoring the estuary. You want to know what your soils are. Also, ID beach replenishment materials, and then also we can you can determine how much volumetric shoreline change and erosion that has occurred from soil survey to soil survey. This is a map that was produced by Jim Tureen, who should be presenting this talk as well, on oyster restoration sites. And basically, we can help you predict and show you what soils are good in your subaqueous environment for oyster restoration. How about subaquatic vegetation restoration and eelgrass? These, again, would be accurate inventories of some of the soils that have a high acid sulfate soil potentials. Some of these soils also sequester a tremendous amount of blue carbon. Where are those soils? What are those soils? How about ecological site descriptions? People are always trying to restore these estuaries to a particular endpoint. We can help you through that with identifying what your soil types, what are you dealing with here? And then, again, accurate soil survey inventory for climate change. We're going through those gradual sea level rise events and also increased severity of storm frequent or more frequent storms. So what would we be doing in coastal zone soil survey? We would be updating our tidal marshes. We probably poked one or two holes. I'm generalizing here, but maybe 4 or 5 holes in some of our salt marshes in a county soil survey update. That's not good enough. We don't know exactly what, we can't put 4 or 5 holes in a salt marsh system and tell you exactly what that soil type is. What are you dealing with? You don't know what you're dealing with. So we would be updating our tidal marshes. We'd be updating formerly mapped areas of miscellaneous land areas, the barrier islands, the beaches, the coastal lagoons. This is a coastal zone area. And also some of the mainland areas that are also beginning to experience sea level rise and saltwater encroachment. We would be using our previously established National Cooperative Soil Survey procedures. And basically, again, these coastal areas were extremely broadly mapped in the 19th century. we have the chance to go back and do some much better mapping. What, again, would we be identifying? Those spatial deficiencies, those outdated map unit designs, are you mapping the right soils that are out there? Did you gather enough field documentation data when you previously went through the soil survey? Possibly, probably not. We can do a better job of that. Soil interpretations, we're going to be developing new soil interpretations. Some of the soil interpretation maps I've already showed you, and developing some new soil series as well. This is an example or a particular salt marsh area in New Jersey where you can basically begin to use our archive soil survey products to determine your shoreline change, or go through a shoreline change analysis or erosion analysis. And coupled up with our NOAA's continually updated shoreline product, you can determine how much marsh has been lost. This is another marsh in southern New Jersey. You might be able to see a yellow. No good? I'm scared to click anywhere else. There's a yellow pin on that map on the right side of where that is located in New Jersey, but basically the image on the left side is from 2002. The image on the right is from 2016. Same scale, just different imagery using Google Earth, and that timeline shift there. Basically, that red line is now the edge of the salt marsh. In the Delaware Estuary and the Partnership for Delaware Estuaries quotes that they are losing about an acre of salt marsh a day in the Delaware Estuary area. It's pretty amazing. I'm going to show you a brief, very quick Winter Storm Jonas. I'm going to show you an interpretation design and flaw. If you notice the slide or the tweet on the left, the address in Wildwood is 25th and Delaware. That location is, I'm scared to, I think I could project and still be on mic, but basically that 25th and Delaware location is that yellow pin there on the map. Can everybody see that? See that white building that's there? This is our web soil survey product at this point. Can you see that white building still? There's that white building. Basically, this is one of our flooding frequency interpretation maps. And basically what that red color indicates is that you have no flooding at that particular location. I don't want to tell those people that that doesn't flood. I don't want to tell them that they can't have a basement there. You've got 3 minutes.
I know.
Okay.
But notice the I talk differently than him. I'm obviously from the South. My name is Greg Taylor. We are trying to get through this very fast, so we thought we make it work better together. How do we do this now? Well, the first thing we need is bathymetry. We got to be able to cut out our landforms. Bathymetry is extremely important to us. Along with these other tools, we basically start cutting out landforms, just like how we would map under the air, terrestrial subaerial mapping. We start cutting out landforms using bathymetry. Then we go out and we fill in the blanks. We use every tool in the toolbox, bottom scan, side scan, jumping in the water, not kidding. Whatever we got to do to start figuring out what landforms we're on, and then we start creating maps. There's GPR landforms. We're not making them up. These are already established and defined in all of our publications. And then you literally go out and we start digging holes. The old-fashioned way in some places. In other places, we use vibrocores. Rex hit on this earlier. And simply, we're using a pontoon boat. Typically, for subaqueous soil cores, we're using a pontoon boat, mainly because of shallow draft and also the center of gravity. And you don't want to cut a trap door hole in the middle of a... They don't like that a whole lot. This is going to be fun if this works. This is a real quick video that we threw together. Basically shows how we do this. This is standing the core up. Again, 3-inch aluminum piping, irrigation pipe, taking a vibrocore. It's a concrete vibrator. You hook it to a yoke, fire it up, and now you get to see why we have Rob the linebacker work for us. This is how you get it in. Goes pretty quick. Notice the ripping tide under the boat right there. You've got two anchors. You throw two out and you pull back till it's tight. Then you throw one off the back and it stabilizes the boat. And then you'll use a chain hoist. Notice we've got a tripod that he's under. When this comes off, we'll cut it off, fill it with water to keep suction, put a cap on it, pull it out. There it is in. This is Rob splitting it. Notice I'm running the camera a lot. But there's one of the cores and split it up. So, results, very, very quickly. Okay, we once had water on our maps. Now you have soil lines, soil polygons. Where we have soil polygons, I can tell you more about it. We can give you interpretations. I can tell you, if you're trying to restore oysters somewhere, where to do that. If you're looking at leases, if you're a municipality or somebody else that controls the estuaries and you're wanting to set up the leases where people are putting their effort and money where they'll get a return, we can tell you that. Here again also, it's clamp soil dredging. How many's ever heard of acid sulfate? The dangers of digging up the devil, in my way of southern way of saying things. So, this tells you where you have that potential. If you're going to dredge in these areas, you've got a very good chance, because when we went out and pulled these cores, this is where sulfides was indicated. Clams. Okay, I'm going to real quick. This is the region that I work in, but Rob and I both work on a focus team across the whole United States for the Soil Science Division of NRCS. But I've always worked here in the southeast and a little bit in Texas because, let's just face it, if I go to the north, I need an interpreter. So here's what's next for us. These are just some of the projects that we've started speaking to people about. We have just finished Wahobos Bay in Puerto Rico, Wausau Sound, Merrill's Inlet, Swan Quarter, places all over Maryland, New Jersey. We've actually got, Rex, we've already started writing the project for St. John's. We're planning ahead for everyone we've talked to, wherever anybody in this room and anywhere else is headed to work, we want to work with you. We try to partner this way. If you're working there, that's where we want to go to, because we need you guys just like hopefully you need us. And with that, we're out of time, I know. And any questions? That's why the medics go last. Thank you.